Okay. From here on,
it's like we come through.
You guys got fat while everybody starved on the street.
It's my turn.
Nick Bishop, forallmasters.com, forallmasters.tumblr.com, forallmasters.podomatic.com, etc., etc., etc. I'm privileged to be sitting here, hanging out on the Lower East Side, with a mixtape pioneer, legendary DJ, G-Bo the Pro. Say what's up, man.
What up, man? What's good?
We're just hanging out in a parked car on the Lower East Side, essentially. Exactly. You know, we do how we gotta do it, you know?
Exactly. Renegade, renegade.
People that don't know, G-Bo took blending to a whole nother level back in the 90s with his collaborations with DJ Double R. We're going to do something a little bit different this week. Rather than typical interview, you know, just sort of scratching the surface on your whole career and all your accomplishments, we're going to do something different. What we're going to do is we're going to get really deep down in depth into one mixtape in particular.
Okay.
As the tape gets kicked off, punks get picked off, and Renaissance is on your whack shit.
What I have in my hands right now is an actual copy of your last collaboration with Double R. It's volume 25.
Number 25. This is like, you know, like telling a story from the end in a way.
Yeah.
It's like a Tarantino movie. Like we're,
yeah,
starting from the end. And it's interesting listening to this tape because this was the very last tape that Double R and I did.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, we had a studio on Madison Avenue, downtown on 32nd Street. We had just lost our deal with Tommy Boy. An artist named Agent 106.
Okay.
So
he was on a lot of the old tapes, right?
Right, he was on a couple of the old tapes, right? So we had him signed to Tommy Boy. And, you know, we were, like, on to bigger and better things. We, like, moved downtown, you know, got a studio downtown. And, you know, we lost the deal.
Yeah.
So now, like, oh, shit, we have, like, the studio downtown. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, damn, like, we got to make it happen,
right,
no matter
right.
one way or the other. You know, and naively, I mean, you know, naively, you're thinking that the record deal is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you kind of grow. We're making tapes and we're creating a following, mm-hmm, without the help of any label.
Right.
So in essence, we were a label.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and naively, we were chasing that label, that dream, that illusion.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And It didn't pan out in the end, you know. So I'm listening to this part, and this is actually my freestyle.
Right, that's
first
right.
Time,
I
this is actually
that.
The first time that I ever rhymed on a tape.
Wow.
And this was again because, you know, the whole fallout with Agent 106. You know, mm-hmm, now he lost his deal. Now he's like, you know, away from the crew, so
right,
he's not down with us anymore. And I'm, you know, we needed a role filled.
Yeah.
You know, so I just basically was like, all right, fuck it, I'll do it. And, you know.
You sound nice, though.
Did my thing, hey.
Yeah.
You know, for a first freestyle, I don't think it was that, you know, I don't think it was that bad.
Hey, kid, that's what I mean. Yo, if you ain't ready for this, don't even step in the room.
You're kind of throwing shots at somebody on this, though, aren't you?
Little jabs, you know,
yeah.
and really, you know, it was at Clue.
Let's
not get it twisted.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, you know, there was a, you know, like we took pride in the fact that, you know, our tapes were very artistic, that we took a lot of time to create these blends, and they were creative.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't about just having new records,
right?
You know, that wasn't the thing. The thing was the creativity involved. You know, we could have played new records all day.
Yeah.
You know, but that wasn't what it was for us. So yeah, we were taking shots at him, you know, but interestingly enough, the whole, you know, everybody who was a mixtape DJ at the time was taking shots at Clue.
Yeah, he was like, not a popular dude.
He was like, you know, he was the you know, like the antichrist of mixtape DJs at the time, you know what I'm saying?
Because was it just because he was on top, or was there more to it?
I don't think,
it
you know,
that?
I think, like I said, I think it was more because of, I don't think it was the being on top thing, because, you know, if the guy is good, if he shows skills, if he, you know, it's like that would be one thing. You have to give it up.
No.
You know, you got to give it up. But the guy was just playing one record after the other. It was basically a pause tape.
Yeah, well, yeah.
His marketing was very brilliant.
He made his mark on the game, so there's no denying that.
There's no, you cannot take a thing away from Clue. The man was brilliant. You know, whereas Double R and myself would stab the tape each side once.
Yeah.
DJ Ray, Double R, G-Bo the Pro, end of story. Mm-hmm. He solidified his name by basically stabbing it after every record.
Every record.
Clue. So he
every verse.
Right. So I mean he, you know, I don't know if it was purposely or it was, you know, accidentally or whatever, but it was brilliant. It was a brilliant stroke because he essentially cemented his name into everybody's head in that way.
And how many imitators did he have after
that? Well, he had a lot of imitators, but I mean there were people that predated him also.
SNS
was like the guy that was like known for playing new shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember SNS getting in trouble for playing, you know, a Naughty by Nature song that he wasn't supposed to play. You know, he got in trouble for playing an Onyx song, This Is the Way We Walk in New York, which he basically, you know, he almost ruined Onyx single-handedly because that was like supposed to be their next big thing, and he just killed the surprise. He just killed it. And you know, like, these labels didn't know what to do with us. On one hand, they were giving us records and they were giving us access and stuff, but you know,
the music industry is always kind of the last to catch on.
They're always last.
Be it mixtapes, be it Napster, be it blogs.
They always catch on late.
They can never find the correct way to manipulate it, to take something that's a popular force within the art form and capitalize on it.
They're always hating.
Right.
I mean, and again, you know, on one hand, like I said, they were giving us the records to play, and they knew we were making tapes. But on the other hand, you know, it's bootlegging.
Right.
So you know, you're not allowed to make money on it, and you know, we're promoting the artists, whatever. It was just very, very strange. And they never. I mean, they adapted late. You know, very good.
1-2, watch out for the man in blue 3-4. I keep it going hard 4-5-6. You're sticking me with 9-6-7-8. I'm forced to call cannabis 9-10. You put me in the pen if I can do it.
This tape is circa late 97.
Yep.
Yeah.
97, 98 maybe.
And I'm hearing this Wyclef record with Cannabis. Were you swept up in the Cannabis frenzy at the time?
Frenzy, I wouldn't say. I thought the guy was very talented, you know, but I think one dimensional in the sense that, you know, to me he wasn't a star.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't a star. He was a brilliant lyricist and a battler.
Mm-hmm.
But that to me is like only part of it. This beat right here was just so sick. Oh my god, I could not stop. I remember
I bought the CD single for Gone Till November for this track. This track in the remix,
I could not stop playing this track. The instrumental, we used to have people rhyming over this and all that, man. It was crazy. We did a thing over this beat called actually Pop the Brown Hornet, who's like, you know, down with like a different faction of Wu.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
Pop the Brown Hornet. Mm-hmm. He did a thing called "Dreams of Fucking a Movie Star Bitch," and he did a brilliant rhyme to that shit, to that beat.
And it was over at the No Airplay beat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at?
Yeah, it's like a ghostwriter. You only see the initials at the bottom.
In this guitar sample here. This I've heard this on a Master Killer record.
Yeah.
What is that from? I have this Master Killer record. It's a white label.
This was a beat. This is my boy BA.
Yeah, he's rapping over this. Yeah,
you know, who was down with us at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I forget.
He's on the intro to this tape as well.
Right. I didn't make this. I'm trying to remember, did I make this beat?
I'll send it to you. I'm almost sure
that this song was a Spanish song.
Okay.
That we jacked this from, because at the time we were very much into using Spanish records,
right, yeah,
and sampling them. There were a lot of, you know, Los Angeles Negros and stuff like that we were discovering We used to call them tu madre joints. Mm-hmm. That translates into your mother joints, because those are your, like, our old Spanish moms used to listen to those records.
Oh, okay, all right. I took that differently.
There was some hip hop in
there. I
think it's
like a diss record or
something. No, it's not a diss. It's like your mother, meaning like, you know, your moms used to listen to them old records. And little did we know that there was some hip hop in there.
Yeah, we
were digging.
I mean, this guitar is dope. I mean, it sounds awesome.
I'm almost sure this was a Latin sample. I could verify that with my man Double R. But yeah,
I'll send you the recording that I have. It's a record called Secret Rivals, and it's Master Killa over this guitar. But the drum pattern is totally different.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big shout to my man BA, man. He's in Orlando. He's still doing his damn thing out there.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm your beacon, shedding light by teaching and reaching out to the community with lessons of building unity.
All right, now, here's the thing, man. We took a real big risk.
Right.
We took a real big... There was a lot of stuff happening at this time, too. You know, there's a lot of... You got to understand, this is the end, you know, of Double R and myself.
So you knew when you made this tape that this was going to be the last tape?
No, not really, but there was a lot of...
But you felt it.
There was a lot of tension and a lot of turmoil, a lot of things happening. I had just met my fiancé at the time, you know, so... I don't know if he took that like on some Yoko Ono shit, you know, with the Beatles. I don't know if he took it that way, but there was a lot of tension there. So, you know, we were trying different things, you know, and my fiance at the time was a poet, so she got involved in the tape. This cat, Joseph Cordero, who, you know, this is the Beacon.
Yeah, the Beacon.
And, you know, he's like this professor. This dude is like, you know, our age, but like has a master's degree,
nah.
You know. So we were like, you know, hanging with this cat, and he just had like all this knowledge, you know. So he got involved. He wasn't in the artist capacity, really, you know.
Right.
He was more like on the management level and just trying to make things happen or whatever, but he just kind of got sucked in,
yeah,
you know, creatively, and this is what came out of it. You know, we took a huge chance.
Definitely. Did you get
incorporating poetry into a mixtape,
and
then to add beats to it on top of it? It was like that was something that hadn't been done to that point.
What was the response like to that?
Not a good one.
That's real. That's real, man. Yeah,
not a good one. I mean, people did not. They didn't see that coming. They didn't expect that from us. It wasn't what they traditionally.
But it was something you wanted to do.
I mean, listen. You
something you felt strongly
about. We felt we always have to challenge ourselves to not stay the same, you know. So this was, you know, along those same lines. We were making we were changing something. We were doing something different than
that's hip hop.
But that's what an artist does, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, even bigger than hip hop. That's what an artist is
supposed to do. It's supposed to break boundaries. You know, you do the same shit all the time. It's like shit is whack.
No,
shit is whack. But it wasn't received very well, no.
Que lo que hay aquí, estos tipos no quieren be feo conmigo. Me ven y me dicen, ay, yo.
I love this Fat Joe freestyle.
Oh, man.
This instrumental is awesome.
All right, some background on Fat Joe.
Please, yes.
Fat Joe, oh, my God. How do I even say this?
Okay. However you want.
First time I met Fat Joe. Right, I met him. I think there was like some video shoot or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I really wanted to embrace Fat Joe because, like, he's like this really impactful guy. Now, he doesn't even have an album yet. I think maybe his album just came out,
mm-hmm,
right? So, I'm very much into, you know, lyrics,
yeah,
super much. You know, I was really into lyrics and stuff like that. So, to me, Fat Joe, you know, his stuff was very simple.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard.
Yeah.
Very hard. And I love that about him. And I love what he projected.
Yeah.
But to me, the lyrics were like simple, like really simple.
Okay.
And I'm an honest dude. You know what I'm saying? I you know, so when I first met Fat Joe, he said to me, he said, yo, man, you guys, you and Double R, man, are the best.
Wow.
Don't let anybody tell you any different. And, you know, coming from the Puerto Rican rapper rappers, like, that shit was, like, the biggest compliment.
Yeah.
But, unfortunately, I think, and I think he got the sense that, you know, I could not say the same thing about what I felt about his album. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And not to, you know, not to throw dirt on the shit. His shit was dope. It just, yeah. I was on a different, you know, I was checking for something else.
Right, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like I said, it's not that his shit was wack. His shit was far from wack. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that was out at the time was Flo-Jo.
Right, yeah. Joe, in 93, 94.
Lyrically, is, yeah. Now, you know.
He's progressed so much since.
He has progressed so, so much. So, Joe's the type of cat that will hold a grudge to the day he dies.
Yeah.
And I think he would tell you that. So, anyway, fast forward, you know, years later, you know, we wanted to get a freestyle from him.
Yeah.
You know, and he came in, and I don't know if you could hear his voice, but his voice was really, like, fucked up. Like,
yeah.
Just really, he had, like, a sore throat. Like,
yeah.
He was just not sounding, like, his great.
His delivery on the track is
and
not
the
something
track,
accustomed to hearing from.
The track was a Spanish track.
It's yeah,
like
yeah, yeah,
That sample is like some Spanish music mm-hmm. that we got.
Your mother. Yeah,
exactly.
Your mother music.
Tu madre joint. Tu madre joint and shit. So, and that's a beat that I made. So, he came in and he blessed the spot. And I'm grateful to this day that you know, that he put the bullshit aside.
Yeah.
And he did that for me, man. That was huge, yo. I would never say a bad word about Fat Joe just because of what he represents. You know, I get mad even when, like, 50 disses him because
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
he's, like, the only dude we got. In
right.
Like, I mean, obviously we got Joel Ortiz and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there's so few of us
right.
that you can't diss any of us, man, because there's so few of us. You're trying to knock one of us out the game, man. You know, I take that shit personally.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So
that.
There's so few of us that there should be nobody trying to take us out the game like that, especially somebody like 50. It's like, dog, it's like, come on, you bugging.
We don't throw gang signs in New York. We bang nines in New York.
Talk about who's this here? Talk about this.
That's Porter Rock.
Oh,
Porter Rock, Spanish Harlem product. I actually got him a deal later on with Sony Epic.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit, you know, soured. You know, we were into it. You know, we recorded joints. We got money from Epic, all of that. And that shit fell through. And that's kind of when I felt just, I was just disenchanted
yeah.
with the music business altogether and just basically got out. This was like in 99, 2000. I was just like done. I was like, you know what, fuck this. But Porto, oh my God, yo, Porto was a star
yeah.
in every sense of the word. Porto Rock is, to this day, I mean, I know he's just, he has this magnetism, this charisma, this edge, this just street grittiness that, you know, you can't copy that. You can't fake that.
Right.
You know, he had to live through a lot of real fucked up shit to be that person.
Yeah.
And
a unique his, delivery.
And the
flow.
Delivery yeah. was just genuine. So yeah. real, so genuine, you know? Keep coming to you, pour sperm from your boots.
Vigilante, hardcore to the penis. Tell you, fuck you, my attitude. Great blends here, though.
The blends, man, we, you know, that's something that we just took so much pride in.
Yeah.
You know, Double R to me, like I said, you know, I don't know if, you know, before we started the interview, I was telling you that Double R really was the mentor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he created a certain style of DJing out of, you know, in a way out of necessity, like not having the equipment.
Right.
He had these ideas and he didn't have the equipment to execute them.
Yeah.
He could not afford a reel-to-reel, mm-hmm. could not afford 1200s, could not mm-hmm. afford a lot of stuff. So he had one cheap turntable and two tape decks, and he was able to create things that sounded like he had four turntables in a room.
That's
and
so
had
amazing.
Them all in perfect sync.
Yeah.
And, you know, what he had to go through to make it sound like that was amazing. So when he met me, I introduced him to a four-track.
Nice, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So he comes to see me one day because he needs help with some scratching yeah. or something. And I'm not the greatest scratcher in the world, but, you know, better than he was. So he's asking me, you know, it's like, what is that machine you have?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this machine you can do... you know, you could put the voice here, you can put the snare here, you can put the piano here, and then he took that to another level. He's like, oh, shit, wait a minute, we could do that. We could put records on each track, and that was the birth of it. That was, you know, I had started an intro, and I wanted him to hear it, and he heard it, and that became take number 9.
Wow.
And that was the very first tape.
That you guys did together, yeah.
Yeah, we did together. And number 1 through 8 was Double R by himself. They were freestyle tapes, house, and a little bit of reggae. But, you know, awesome stuff.
Greatest gift I ever received in my life, greatest Christmas gift. I got the entry-level Tascam 4-track.
Yeah, that we had the 644.
Yeah. Yeah, we're real heavy on 4-track talk for All Masters. For some reason, it always comes up.
Oh my God, 4-track was like the greatest thing because, you know, if you look at it from the regular concept of multi-tracking, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you put a record together. You put, you know, the drums on one track, the this, the that. Mm-hmm. But then if you turn it into this track could be one record, this track could be another record, this track could... You know what? You have no idea that the magic that we made, the pure magic that we made with that 4-track, that it wasn't designed for that, but you know, we, like most hip hop, you know, we alter the
what's available to you.
Well, we misuse things. Like we misuse shit, you know. So that was a perfect example of that. All the fellas in the back, keep it moving. What? All the cats on the side, keep it moving. What? And my man, Fat Man Scoop was the one that got us the deal at Tommy Boy.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I guess he was an A&R there at the time.
Were you doing these routines in clubs?
No, you know what's interesting? Like a lot of the knock on Double R and myself is that, you know, oh, but they, can they do it live?
Oh yeah.
You know, so yeah. Granted, we could not do a lot of that stuff live. Yeah. Impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you ask anybody to do some of that stuff live, and it's like impossible. But not that we were bad DJs live. We just couldn't do a lot of that stuff. You know, we would take a tape. You know, I would take either a tape deck to a party, or we would go to Don One, which was a dub play spot in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
And press up dub plates of our remixes.
Wow.
And we'd be able to play records. You know, we would be able to play them, you know, just as if, you know, it was just an exclusive.
Do you still have a lot of those old records?
Dub plates? I don't think I have. I think maybe I have one or two of my old dub plates. But, Don One in Brooklyn. That's where we used to go to get them joints.
Wow. I want to mention something about this Firm record that you're playing. For years, whenever I got my hands on this tape, which is probably a couple months after it actually came out, it was the only way I knew this record, the world famous remix of Firm Biz, until, you know, like the internet years later is the only recording of it I ever had. So I always, whenever I hear it, I always expect to hear that little stutter, that little scratch that you threw in at the beginning of Half a Mil's verse, and it just doesn't sound right to me without it.
Without it. I mean, world famous, the original.
Yeah.
Is one of my favorite records of all time. I don't know what it is about that record, but it just... So whenever somebody uses it and uses it well, it's like, oh, man. And they killed it, man.
Yeah,
that Firm album, you know, for the commercial, quote-unquote, flop that it was, to me, was a good album, man. It was a really
I feel the
album.
Same way, and I think it stands up a lot better in retrospect, too.
You're right.
I think, you know, I was disappointed about it when it came out myself, but I think just my expectations were different.
I mean, you know, when you put Dre, Nas, you know, AZ, Foxy, everybody's at the top of at the pinnacle of their game.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking that, you know, you're going to get this East Coast, West Coast, you know, and in essence, that's what it was. It was a combination.
But I listen to it now, and it's like classic track after classic track for the most part.
Classic joints.
You know? I'm like, how did I ever hate on this?
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know.
But you gotta understand all the amazing stuff that was happening at the time.
Right.
I mean, we were spoiled.
Yeah.
We didn't know it at the time.
we were spoiled in the 90s, for sure.
A lot of good music back then.
For sure. And the tape, and the mixtapes too at the time.
Yep. That was the second wave of the mixtapes. Because the first wave, I would say, was the Brucey B's of the world. Triple C, you know, even Kid Capri, you know, like that to me really was like the first wave of the mixtape era, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. And then came, you know, myself, the doo-wops of the world,
yeah.
The SNSs, the Craig G's and stuff like that, you know. And then, you know, and then really to me, like, the guy that straddled the eras after us was Clue.
Yeah.
Who was the one that took it elsewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you could... You know, you could argue that, you know, I don't know, he ruined it, or he this or that. You know, I don't know. I don't think he ruined it.
No,
he just,
you know,
he added to it in a way that, you know.
It's, like, you know, I think if anything, you know, the internet kind of killed the mixtape. That's my take on it. Someone that was, and this is coming from someone who was spending $40 a week on CDs up until 2004, early 2005. And then it was just became like, well, you know, this is, you know, just like everything else. Oh, this is now all available for free. You know, now like there's multiple sites, there's torrents, there's all this shit, and just like, you know. And it wasn't that I stopped buying them; it's that the stores that were selling them where I live closed down because they couldn't.
Yeah, because
you know,
nobody was making a buck on it anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, we used to sell, you know.
I was, you know, I had the internet before 2005. I was still buying CDs, but.
Internet, man. Internet ruined a lot of shit.
Yeah,
I don't know if necessarily mixtapes, but just a lot of, you know, people buying music in general.
And now I miss it terribly. Never did radio.
I never did radio, no.
Why was that?
Just never had the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think because we were so into the mixtapes, like, we really took it to heart.
Mm-hmm.
We really took it to heart that it was an illegal thing,
right?
You know, so when there were, like, I remember the first mixtape awards, Justo mixtape awards, right? I remember thinking about the movie. I forget what movie was that. Was that like Serpico or some shit, where they invite, you know, like all these guys and they send them letters,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
yo,
yeah,
come,
yeah,
get your Yankee tickets.
Sting operation, yeah.
Come get your Yankee tickets, yo. Shit's gonna be dope. You got free Yankee tickets. You show up and everybody gets arrested.
Yeah.
That's how paranoid,
right,
I was. Like, I'm like, fuck a
mixtape.
That's
a logical assumption.
I'm like, fuck a mixtape.
This is the
awards.
Black market industry,
exactly.
Essentially, you know.
Fuck a mixtape awards. Nah, nigga. There's no way y'all gonna catch me out there. So we were very on the low. We would never put pictures of ourselves, mm-hmm, on the mixtapes. You never saw pictures of us. We were very much on the low. We were, you know, and we liked it that way. We wanted to create, I mean, you know, maybe it was kind of accidental, but there was a certain mystique that we liked.
Yeah.
You know, we liked a certain mystery. There were certain MCs that, you know, back in the days that had like this mystique.
Yeah.
You know, Rakim, just like he had this mystique, man. We wanted to emulate that epic.
Yeah. And it's something about just letting the music speak for itself.
Right. We would let the music speak for us.
Right.
We would not have to explain to you like why we're playing this,
yeah,
or whatever. It's like, you know, and if we ever did have to say something, we would make the music say it.
It's sort of the antithesis of, you know, Khaled's Be the Best.
Right. Right. And again, you know, Khaled, yo, the guy built an empire.
Yeah.
Guy's on top. He's BET Awards. He got hit records.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yo, man, you know, I love that these guys are making something of it. You,
yeah,
know, it's not, they're dope, man. I think that, you know, I think that is dope. I'll never be on some hate and shit like, oh, you know, I could have done that. Why that's not? Hell no, man. Get money, yo. That's,
yeah,
dope.
But you're happy with the recognition that you've received.
Yeah. I can't be mad at it, man. It's like, you know, people throw the word legend around like, holy shit, you know? Like, I when I think of legends, I think of people like, you know, like I said, like the Rakims or like the Red Alerts of the world,
yeah,
or like, you know, like I think of those people, and, you know, to a different extent, you know, Latin Rascals, because those are the DJs that we emulated coming up. You know, that's where we got that kind of that style of blending.
Right.
You know, they were on radio, and we just did it on a mixtape level. To me, Jelly Bean is a legend. To me, Little Louis Vega is a legend. You know, like when they put that tag on me, or when they put it on Double R, it's humbling, man. It's like, you know, it's not the kind of thing you call yourself. I'm not comfortable with calling myself that. You know, it's just weird.
No, I understand,
like, you know,
that
you don't walk around with that.
Yeah.
You know, you let other people say that about you, which is cool. But you know, yeah, I'm I'm happy that the contribution does get recognized.
Jump in the whip, get them cats I wanted to get since the tavern on the Green Robbery in 86.
I think this is incredible what you did here, and I want everyone to know about this, and I hope encourage some people to pick it up and support. All the mixtapes that you did, numbers 9 through 25,
yep.
All the collaborations with Double R, they're available in a digital box set.
Correct. Now, you know, I may have mentioned to you earlier that after 2000, I left the game alone.
Yeah.
I was disgusted with the game, and I walked away for a while. And, you know, when things are meant for you, they have a way of coming back to you.
Yeah.
So what happened was, I figured if I was going to get back into the game or back into DJing, what I wanted to do was I wanted to make these tapes. Because that's what anybody would ask. Everybody and everybody would ask me, yo, what's up with the tapes?
Right.
Can I get this?
Yeah.
Can I get a copy of this?
Yeah,
can
yeah.
I get it? I'm like, nah. So what I did was I created a CD box set first. Mm-hmm. I digitized all of the tapes, you know, remastered everything, mm-hmm. put it on a CD set. And then I figured, you know, with the popularity of iPods, you know, iTunes and all that shit was happening at the time, I was like, you know what? I'm going to turn this into a digital box set via, like, a USB.
Yeah.
And what I did was I attached pictures onto each track. So
yeah.
I would put pictures of the old, you know, the old...
The insert,
yeah, the yeah. actual tape, the old logos and yeah. stuff like that. So that, to me, was like a digital box set. You know, that to me, like, I'm watching... you know, late night TV, and I would see Time Life,
yeah.
you know, selling these collaborations.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, yo, they're charging $150, but guess what? Whoever grew up to that music,
yeah.
that's nothing to them. That's
exactly,
like, I'll pay
exactly.
$150 yeah. no matter what, because that's what I grew up to. Mm. And that's what I felt that I could do. You know, I felt like I could, like, on a marketing level, to me, like, on a sales level, I wasn't going to make available one tape.
Yeah.
Number 9, number 13,
yeah,
individual
yeah, yeah.
sale just made no sense, no
right.
business sense to me. You know, I figured if you wanted it, if you were a fan, you know, you could pick it up as a set.
Yeah.
And you're going to pay $100-$150 for it. You know, and it's been successful. You
yeah.
know, like, holy
That's
shit.
Awesome.
Like, holy shit, people are actually, you know.
Well, on my word, going on the record and to you, I'm telling you, I'm picking up immediately.
Oh, man, because, I appreciate it.
And I wish more DJs would follow suit. It's... people like me that obsessively collect tapes, you know. Like,
well, I'm surprised.
It's awesome to find someone doing that. It's like, yeah,
I'm surprised.
I'll pay $150 to have the collection. Why wouldn't
right.
I?
I'm surprised that other DJs are just starting to, like, follow suit, you know. And again, man, it's to me, it's about the innovation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, we always pride ourselves in. And being innovative
and original,
and doing things in a way that make others follow suit,
yeah.
and that's always been the case. So, you know, I think the digital box set is no different. I think, you know, DJs that you haven't heard from in a long time are starting to, like, get the idea, like, oh shit, you know what?
Yeah.
I need to do this digital box set because people have been asking about me.
Yeah.
So,
well, hopefully, they acknowledge your innovation.
I doubt that they.
yeah.
You know, I doubt that they're gonna do that, but you know. You and I both know.
You and I both know, and it's on the record, and everyone listening knows.
Digital box set been out for, you know, 3 or 4 years at least. So,
so let people know how they can reach you and how they can pick that up.
Well, they can reach me on Twitter. I'm working on gbolthepro.com right now.
Okay.
It's not up and running yet, but I will have that, you know, very soon. But the best way to get at me is on Twitter, gbolthepro, gbothepro. At twitter.com. That's where I live. You can find out where I'm playing, you can find out, you know, what I'm thinking, all of that, you know. So check me out on that.
That's what's up. Yeah, awesome, man. Well, thank you for sitting down, listening to the tape. I hope
no
it brought
question.
Back some good memories for you.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention here is I wanted to tell you a story about this tape that you just handed me.
Oh, okay.
New York City Tape Masters was my company.
Really?
New York City Tape Masters was how Double R and myself were keeping the studio downtown afloat.
Wow.
Because now remember, we just lost our deal. So now we don't have a fucking record deal anymore, right? And we're barely making tapes.
Oh my God.
So we're like, shit, yo, what are we going to do to, you know, we got to pay rent. We got to do this. We got to do that. So we started a company and we started selling everybody's mixtape.
Wow.
you know. But it, you know, it, obviously we didn't want to let people know that it was us.
Yeah.
You know, we had to kind of play the back. But that's our that was our company, and we used to put ads in the Source, like all these crazy ass ads in the Source with like these, you know, smart aleck remarks and shit like that. But yeah, man. So
wow.
If you ever got a tape from New York City Tape Master,
I have quite a few.
That was us.
Wow, man, that's a major revelation. That's great.
Yeah, sir.
ForAllMasters.com, Nick Bishop, Gbo the Pro. Peace.
Tracks no more. I take my time, pour my soul in it. I represent, cock the four thoughts back and blow holes in it. You feel it? Aight, lock it in. This shabby doctoring make you mother. Love hip hop again. Love hip hop again. Love hip hop again.